Mark is a postdoctoral fellow at the University of Connecticut, the Center for Health Intervention and Prevention, and he's now based in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. He has a PhD in anthropology from the University of Connecticut, and he's going to be talking about some of the research experience in the Philadelphia and Hartford research effort on sexual health and communication, and a multi-site study examining sexual health risks and barrier to contraceptive use among inner-city emergent adults. So, Mark.
What did we say? The right click goes forward and the left one goes back? Okay. Okay, the title of my talk is Your Cheating Ways, The Social Construction of Infidelity Among Inner-City Emergent Adults. And I'm just one of many authors on this, and this is just a very small part of a much larger project. I don't have anything to disclose. I wanted to start off with a quote which sort of summarizes what I wanted to talk about today, which is people who have more than one sexual or romantic partner at the same time. And this is from one of our focus groups, and this is an African-American female. And she says, you never know. What, you never sit around and then think, he's cheating on me? And all he really is, because you don't care. Because you got to not care, because he'll do it anyway. You can't be like, that's my man and I'm the only one. Not in 2004, you're not. Trust, everybody's got somebody extra. That quote and that focus group came from Project Fresh, which is the Philadelphia and Hartford Research and Education on Sexual Health and Communication. This is a joint project between the University of Connecticut, the Centers for Disease Control, and the Family Planning Council of Philadelphia. Now, this is a 5-year qualitative and quantitative study, and it focused on inner-city emergent adults, and I'll explain emergent adults a little bit later, of African-American and Puerto Rican descent. And what we really wanted to understand is how these emergent adults understand the risks of sexually transmitted infection and unwanted pregnancy, how they talk about those risks, if they talk about those risks, with their partners, and how that may or may not translate into barrier contraceptive usage. And since this is a complicated issue, we wanted to get a detailed, a comprehensive, and contextualized understanding of sexual and romantic relationships among these inner-city youth. And in order to do that, we employed several different methods. We had sexual life history interviews where our participants talked about basically their entire romantic history from their first romantic or sexual experience all the way on through to the present day. Coital diaries where they were asked to sort of write down week to week, day to day, in real time, the sorts of things that happen in the romantic lives. Focus groups, which we used to get the terms, the types of relationships people had. We did some free listing there, too, to try to understand the types of relationships that they have, what they call these relationships, what these relationships might mean. The pile sorts, which I'm going to talk about in detail today. And the structured questionnaire, which is really our big quantitative piece. All right, emergent adults are adults that are 18 to 25 years old. And they're of interest because and the average age of sexual debut in the U.S. now is 17. But people tend not to get married until the late 20s and early 30s. So unlike in the past where people might, you know, get married, have sex for the first time, and have a baby all kind of right in a row, there's now this long gap between sexual debut and marriage. And during this long gap, people sort of explore. They explore sexually, and they may have multiple sexual partners, either at the same time or in succession. Just to sort of bring home the point about people who are unmarried having sex, like, you know, that was a big mystery, 63% of single males and 67% of single females report themselves as sexually active, in, according to the National Survey of Family Growth. Now, in addition to unwanted pregnancy, one of the big risks is STI infection. Individuals aged 15 to 24 only account for a quarter of sexually active people, but almost half of new STI cases. So there's a group that really is at risk for sexually transmitted infection. Okay, pile sorts, which is what I want to talk about today. And I want to talk a little bit about pile sorts because they're not a method that's used very often. So I want to make sure that I can kind of communicate what they're all about. Pile sorts are a type of cultural domain analysis, and really, you can think of a cultural domain as things that are just of the same type. Fruits could be a cultural domain, or cars could be a cultural domain. In this case, relationships can be a cultural domain. And what you do, and really, you get the cultural domain defined through things like free lists, through interviews, where you sort of get all the things that belong in this domain. And what you do in the pile sorts is you have participants sort items belonging to the domain, in this case, cards with relationship terms on them, based on how the participant thinks those things go together. And this can be open, where you just say, here are the cards, sort them out in as many piles as you want, use whatever criteria you want, or you can have some sort of condition, say, make three piles, or make two piles, one is things that are good and things that are bad, so you can get an understanding. And what this hopefully does for you is provide a cognitive structure of the domain, and it helps you understand the worldview of the participants. Just for a sort of an off-topic example, if you had a domain of cars, and you gave piles of different types of cars to different kinds of people, you might get different responses about which kind of cars go together. For example, an automotive engineer might put all the cars that are built off the same platform together. So they see sort of this domain of cars as platforms. An automotive enthusiast might put cars that have rear-wheel drive together and cars that have front-wheel drive together, irrespective of what they look like, because that aspect of it is what's important to them. So you get an idea of how they see this domain through what they put together. Incidentally, you also, when you do this with somebody, you ask them why they named the piles what they did. So you get an understanding of what it is about those things that puts them together. Now, one way to look at this kind of data is through multidimensional scaling, which is what you do is you take all the pile sorts from all the people that you had do this, and you put them into the computer, which is sort of fancy, incomprehensible math, and it gives you an aggregate similarity matrix, which is basically just the average, on average, what things went together. And it gives you a map, really. And on the map are the items. And the items that are closest together on the map are things that, on average, your informants thought were similar. And the farther apart things are, the more different they were. So this really just provides a quick snapshot of what's going on. Now, our pile sorts, the objective was to focus on this phenomenon of multiple sexual partners among emergent adults. We wanted to know how they categorized different types of multiple partnerships, because there are several different ways somebody could have two sexual romantic partners at the same time, how individuals categorize why they would have multiple partners, and what types of relationships are multiple partners considered cheating, and in which kinds of relationships are they not? Because not in all cases is having two partners at one time considered cheating or something that is bad or something to avoid. Just a quick rundown, the target population, adults 18 to 25, African-American or Puerto Rican descent, born in the U.S. or Puerto Rico, and had to have had sex with a member of the opposite gender within the last year. Quick rundown of the demographics. We had 40 people participate in this method, 10 each, African-American females and males, and Puerto Rican males and females. Average age was 21, about half finished high school, only 2% finished college, 15% had sex with 2 to 5 people in the last 30 days. 73% had been pregnant or had gotten someone pregnant, and only 46% actually reported as having a child, and 93% reported themselves as single. Okay, the first pile sort, which is ways of cheating. Basically, what we did with this pile sort is during the focus groups, we did a free list, and we asked people to list all the possible ways you think somebody could cheat on somebody else, and that formed the basis of this pile sort. And this was a free sort. Basically, we didn't have any conditions on it. We told people they could make as many piles as they wanted, and they could use whatever criteria they wanted to make the piles. And this is what it looks like. And a couple things I wanted to point out. The circles are just guidelines. It's not, when you use this method, it's not really conclusive. You can't say this belongs here and this belongs there. It just kind of gives you an idea. But what you can see is the way things sorted out, sexual ways of cheating or sexual acts all sort of form together. If you can't read those, vaginal sex, anal sex, oral sex are all in that tight cluster under A. That's farthest away from me. I won't bother trying with right and left. French kissing, exchanging fluids, those things all kind of ended up together. Now, closest to me at C, you have a lot of day-to-day interactions. Now, remember, these are things that the informant said could be types of cheating, but they end up together, giving somebody money, kissing someone on the cheek, confiding in someone, giving someone gifts, talking to someone on the phone. But they plot as farthest away from those sexual things. And in between those, you have sort of feeling-based things, developing sexual feelings for someone, doing something you feel guilty about, getting somebody's phone number, developing sexual or romantic feelings for somebody. So those things all sort of ended up together. Now, when you add the pile names to this, you kind of get an idea of where this is going. And basically what happened is when people made these piles, they kind of separated things out into things that are definitely cheating and things that are really not cheating. And these are some examples of pile names. Definitely you are cheating. And that was for the sexual things. Things that are completely okay. This was things that are going, you know, seeing someone on the street, talking to somebody. Time to move on when these things are happening. These were these sort of, you know, middle feelings type of things. And then geek that can't get a date, which was going to strip clubs and that kind of stuff. Another person had blatant cheating for the sexual things. Could be cheating for those feelings-based things and not cheating for the others. The take-home message, I think, for this pile sort, though, is that cheating is really defined as a sexual act. When people talk about cheating, it always ends up being, the cheating act always usually ends up being sexual. Okay. Now, one thing we learned through our preliminary research, and basically it weaves through all of the methods, is that there are lots of different kinds of relationships that these people are getting involved in. So what we wanted to do is take all those relationships, all those relationship types, and have our informants sort them out into three different piles. One pile would be, if you had a concurrent partner in this kind of relationship, that would be considered cheating. And in this pile, if you have a concurrent partner in the relationship, that wouldn't be considered cheating. And the third is having a concurrent partner, well, that would be unclear. We don't know if that would be cheating or not. And this is what this looks like. Closest to me, you have grouping A. And again, these are all sexual relationships, and they're all purely, more or less purely sexual relationships. A shag partner, chicken head, which is someone who gives oral sex to pretty much anyone who asks, a jump, a booty call, a thing on the side. These are all relationships that are really defined, friends with benefits, as a sexual component is really the key to it, and there's not a lot of feelings or emotions involved in the relationship. On the other side, you have B, and B has all the committed relationships in it, husband and wife, hubby and wifey, which are sort of informal long-term partners, boyfriends and girlfriends. And in the middle, you have relationships that are sort of the ambiguous ones, baby mama and baby daddy, dating, and shorty. And these relationships, what they have in common is the relationships that can take several different forms. Baby mama or baby daddy, which is someone you have a child with, that but you don't consider as being in a relationship with currently. Those relationships can take several forms. You might see that person. They might be in your life. They might not be. So those relationships, dating is another thing. You know, you could be just starting to date, or you could be dating for 10 years and consider yourself in a committed relationship. Because those things are ambiguous, they ended up sort of in that middle category. Now, the purely sexual relationships are the ones that sorted out as being more acceptable to have multiple partners. So if you have, a booty call or something like that, it's okay to have two partners in that kind of relationship. Now, when you get to the emotional relationships, multiple partners is considered cheating. If you cheat on your hubby or wife or your husband, that's considered cheating. And in the middle, those are the ones that aren't clear, and that really seems to be because those relationships have an emotional component, but the levels of commitment can vary. And the take-home message from this one, I think, is that the acceptability of cheating is based on the emotional component. So while cheating itself tends to be a sexual kind of act, whether something is cheating or not really depends on the level of emotional involvement within the relationship. Okay. Now, the third pile sort was that I want to talk about was reasons that somebody would cheat in a committed relationship. So we wanted to know, well, if you're in a committed relationship, why, and you take the reasons why someone would have more than one partner at one time, which we got from the focus groups and the free lists, what reasons go together? And we asked, this is a directed sort, and we asked people to have three piles. One was reasons you think that would be acceptable to have a second partner, reasons that wouldn't be acceptable, and reasons that you're not sure about. Okay. Now, this one's a little more diffuse than the other ones, but there's still some trends here. underneath the less acceptable reasons, there are reasons that are basically three different kinds. You get sexual gratification kinds of reasons, because someone is a good lover, for example, to get some excitement because you're curious or because you're horny. Those types of things are in that cluster. The second kind of thing that's in that cluster are sort of social status reasons. Cheating because you want to be with someone who's more popular or someone who's considered a player. And also, the third sort of thing that's in there is cheating for resources. Cheating because you need access to drugs or a car or to get gifts or something like that. So all those reasons ended up clustering together. Now, furthest away from those, the more acceptable reasons tend to be more feelings-based and more sort of like getting things out of a second relationship you can't get out of your first relationship, finding someone who cares about you, who treats you well, who you can have a romance with, who helps you cope with things. So if you think about this as sort of a scale of acceptability, things that are for gratification, basically they're all sort of for gratification in some way or another, are less acceptable. But feelings that are based on emotions are considered more acceptable. And this is really kind of just what I said. Okay, so some conclusions that we can draw from all this. Sexual relationships are not always committed relationships. I'm sure that's probably not a big surprise, but that's what we found. And you really can't cheat on a relationship that's purely sexual. Multiple casual sexual partners are understood and they're sort of accepted as something that happens. However, cheating is largely understood as having a sexual relationship with another person when you're in a committed relationship. That's not okay. That's where people tend to talk about being hurt. That's where the most damage is done. Emotional cheating, which is sort of like developing feelings for somebody else, those kinds of things, are acknowledged. And it's sort of be on the road to sexual cheating. Like, well, these things are happening. It's not cheating. It ain't great. But, you know, it's a sign that something is wrong. But it's not always considered cheating as such. And these things happen. And the kind of the big sum up is that in emotional relationships, there's an aspect of trust in your partner. Therefore, cheating is a more serious betrayal. And here's a great double negative, which is not the case when emotions aren't involved, even when the relationship is sexual. Now, taking this back to risk, and I said this is a very small part of a very large project, one of the things we found out is relationships are really complicated, and not all sexual relationships are created equal, so you can't really treat them as equal. Just because two people are having sex, that could mean a whole host of other things. When you pull this back into larger issues of trust and condom use, and this kind of goes into things we found in other parts of the study, condom usage is much more common with casual partners. Those things that are considered casual just for sexual, the ones that are really sexual. But as a relationship becomes more committed, condom use becomes less common because what happens is once you're serious with somebody, you consider not using a condom as a sign of trust in that person. So condom use falls off really quickly once two people consider themselves committed. So in order to prevent risk, you really need to know what kind of relationship that you're talking about in order to reduce it, because just knowing two people are having sex isn't really enough to understand the dynamics of what's going on. And these are just my the references that I use for this talk. Thank you. Any questions? Yes. Okay, the ethnicity gender differences, really, there aren't many. We did something that's called a QAP, which I forgot what the heck that stands for. It's something mathy. But basically, when I ran the pile sorts, I ran them all by sex and ethnicity group. And then I compared them to one another to see if they correlated. So if they correlate together, that means that the two, like you take African-American females and Puerto Rican males, if you compare them in the QAP and they come out as correlating, that means that they're very similar to one another. And I found across the board, no matter what combination that I used, they all come out pretty much the same. Some things tend to shift a little bit, but overall, no matter what ethnicity or gender you're talking about, the results come out the same. Yes?
Can you just talk a little bit about
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's one thing that we found in the sexual life history part of it, which is that relationships move fast. They can go from knowing somebody to having sex to committed and then over within a matter of months. And I think what we can say is that those relationships for them are committed. I mean, even if it's only 3 months or 6 months or a couple of weeks, and I would guess, and I'd have to kind of look back, that the rules of what I'm talking about do apply, even in those quick relationships. But once they're over, people move on really quickly. And one other thing we found, which is sort of related, is that relationships, defining the beginning and the end of a relationship is really, really hard, because they don't, the population that we worked with, they don't really like to put end dates on relationships, because they always kind of like to keep their options open. So in the survey, we asked people to put an end date on a relationship, and I would say I entered the data, and most of the relationships, it doesn't matter when they start, they're considered as not ending. So I agree, we're finding the same kinds of things. There was a question here, yes. Yes. I believe that was, well, I think because we're talking about, why is it just opposite sex and not same sex as well? I think, and this is kind of before my time on the project, but I would guess that one of the reasons is because unintended pregnancy was one of the issues that we wanted to look at, that the decision was just made to sort of take it as opposite sex. We did record same-sex relationships, so we have that data. So we know who had same-sex relationships, and in the methods, if someone did, that shows up, and they do talk about it. Dr. Pamela Erickson is the PI on the project. Yes? No, well, no, that goes, I think, I don't know if we asked about cybersex, but pornography in general. Well, okay, wait, because there's two things you can talk about. Pornography, which is not, but sexual romantic correspondence was in there. And that, can I go back? Where did that come up? I got to find the right pile sort. There it is, sex core and rom core. They end up kind of on the cheating side. But porno, masturbation, strip clubs are kind of on the non-cheating side. Yes?
Was there a defined I'm in a committed relationship and your partner knows they're in one too? Did they define that together even at that moment, even if it was 2 days?
I think it really ends up being whether you consider your relationship committed. In other methods we had, you know, in the survey we had, do you consider it committed? Does your partner consider it committed? You know, we had that. But I think reading the language of the pile sort guide, it wasn't that specific.
And the reason why I was asking that is because it's correlated to the condom usage. So if I'm not committed, you are,
and I'm not committed. Oh, yeah. In other methods, yes, that comes out. This, since this didn't directly relate to condom usage, it didn't end up here, but yes, that does come out. And if you start using a condom in the middle of your relationship, that's kind of saying something. Yes? Yep. That one I don't know. If you explained it a little bit, I probably could tell you. Yeah, and there's lots of ways of doing these sort of similarity matrices, too, with all kinds of different things. Yes? What do you mean by protective behaviors? Yeah.
Well,
Well, this is how it, and this is, I don't have, this is sort of my sense from reading a lot of the different types of data. What happens is there's lots of things going on, because once you're in a committed relationship and you stop using condoms, that's like this trust thing. So if you have somebody, what happens a lot is people will use condoms with the person on the side, or ideally that's what they say they do. But when in their committed relationship, they don't, and that's what they would consider the protection, like they do that. If they mess up and don't do that, whether they would use a condom with their partner, with their serious partner, is up in the air, because if they do, now they're inserting into the relationship this lack of trust. Like, okay, why are you using a condom now? What did you do? Kind of thing. So if there's protective behavior, it's with the person that's considered the less serious partner. But this group is really, they know a lot, and they understand all this, and they really, you know, I'm new to this literature, but I would say that a lack of knowledge is not the problem. They're very aware of what they're doing, what's going on, and what their risks are by the time they get, you know, to be 18 years old.
Oh.
They know. And they do. Actually, condom, are you talking about condom usage?
Or whatever. They don't think that anything bad can happen to them.
Well, there's lots of other stuff involved. They get sexually tested. They get tested for STDs a lot. And the condom usage is actually pretty high in some form. Not consistent, maybe, but it's there.
Thank you also for a really interesting presentation. For those of you who walked in late, the fourth panel participant, Son Yun, was not able to come to the meeting, so we're basically having three presentations. So our last and final presentation is from Mary Plummer, and hold on, let me just advance this.